time for The Outspoken Cyclist, the weekly conversation about cycles, cyclists, travel, trails, advocacy, the bike industry, and much, much more. WJCU broadcasts and streams The Outspoken Cyclist on-air show at 8 a.m. every Saturday morning. In Northeast Ohio, tune in to 88.7 FM, or worldwide, listen in at WJCU.org. Our weekly podcast is available at the close of the on-air show at OutspokenCyclist.com, or download it with your favorite podcatching app to listen anytime. Now here's your host, Diane Jenks.
Hello and welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm your host, Diane Jenks, and this is our show for, wait for it, May 1st, 2021. And we all know what that means. It's the start of National Bike Month. With that in mind, I thought I'd offer a few ideas, as if you didn't have any of your own, about how to celebrate. You could join a local bike club. So if you don't already, there's a lot of camaraderie as well as safety in numbers. And with the most recent CDC guidelines, vaccinated adults should be fine in small groups. You could promise yourself you'll try to commute to work or use your bike for short trips, like to the post office or the library. You could get involved in your local bike advocacy organizations, or you could offer to help build a local trail or help to clean up existing trails or paths. Try to support your local bike shops. Even though we know that parts are scarce, expertise isn't. And if you have more ideas about how to celebrate National Bike Month, leave a comment on our Facebook page. So you might remember that 2 weeks ago we spoke with members of the Business Climate Leaders Organization about the importance of a bill introduced into Congress by Representative Deutsch of Florida that would begin putting a price on carbon emissions. Today, we're going to bring it down to a personal level with John Beamer. John is a Portland engineer and energy conservation expert, and he believes we can all be energy conservation experts too. His new book, Our Environmental Handprints, outlines the many small and large steps we can take as individuals, as families, and as communities to, quote, recover the land, reverse global warming, reclaim the future, end quote. Then we'll talk with Javier Sanchez. Javier is the Miami Dolphins Foundation Director of Development and Partnerships. Back on April 10th, the foundation held its 11th annual Dolphins Challenge Cancer Ride with over 3,300 participants. Touting the title of the largest fundraising event by any sports franchise, DCC 11 raised over $6 million this year alone, and every penny goes directly to cancer research. Lastly, we'll check in with Dennis Mercado Soriano, the executive director of the East Coast Greenway. And in the interest of full disclosure, I'm an advisory board member of the Greenway. But I wanted to talk with Dennis about a ride that's coming up to highlight the section of the Greenway from New York City to Philadelphia. It's the first ever for this ride, and only 500 people can attend. With all 100 camping spots taken, there are only about 175 spots left when Dennis and I spoke a couple of days ago. But I still wanted him to fill you in on the ride. He also told me that day, just that day, that the East Coast Greenway had posted a new job opening for a coordinator for the New York and New Jersey area, and that this ride will fund that position. So John Beamer, whose diverse background includes process psychology as well as engineering and conservation, had a vision of a sort back in 2013. He didn't feel as if he could get much better at reducing his own footprint on the planet, but he could see so many ways that all of us could become proactive as opposed to reactive with a deep sense of generosity. To that end, John's new book, Our Environmental Handprints, outlines dozens of ideas that we can implement to leave our soft handprints on the earth in a sustainable and healthy way. Hello, John. Welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks for being my guest this week. I really appreciate it. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you.
Your new book, Our Environmental Handprints, is about to be published. And the subtitle is Recover Land, Reverse Global Warming, and Reclaim the Future. I guess it was just released, actually. So I know you're an engineer and an energy conservation expert, but tell us a little bit about your background and how you developed the thinking that you lay out for us in this book.
Well, the background for myself, yes, I was an engineer. I am an engineer. I started out in aerospace, and then I worked in energy conservation for 21 years for a large utility. So I got a lot of trying to make it work kind of experience in that respect. And then about 2003, I left the big company, became a mediator, an organizational development consultant, and got some experience with process-oriented psychology. So I try to apply all of that in one way or another to my environmental values. So now, how did the book come about? There's two pieces to that. One is a vision that I had back in October of 2013. I woke up one morning and I realized that there was already a whole lot of good that has been done in the environment. And mostly we're hearing the bad news, but some of that I was already aware of and I just wasn't giving it credit. We have efficient motors, much more efficient motors than we used to have. We have national parks. We have wind energy coming of age. These are things that took years and years and years to develop. We have heroes that helped make that happen. These didn't happen by accident. The other piece was that I ran into a personal challenge. I couldn't get a whole lot better at reducing my footprint, my impact on the earth. You know, my life, my family, and all that sort of thing sort of plateaued me out, if you will. And I was kind of thinking, we've got to find a better way to get beyond doing less. And the idea of creativity as opposed to problem solving was planted in my mind a while back. And that gave me this sense of the handprint as a way to be creative, to go beyond doing less and to do things that actually change the system, to influence other people to do better. So that's the other sort of foundation of the book, if you will.
Well, the book is so comprehensive in so many ways. And we will get to the part where the bicycle fits in. But I think that most people who listen to this show have some sort of an environmental conscience, if you want to call it that, and are looking at ways to be more conservative and have a smaller footprint on the land. So your book covers so many options for sustainability. And I'd like to start with your introduction because I thought it was excellent. Our children are watching, you say. This book emphasizes a positive way of thinking. Simply put, the handprint symbolizes the good we do. And so tell us what some of that good is and what it is not and why it's a good way to begin thinking about sustainability as opposed to the way we might think about it now. What are the kinds of things that we might want to look at?
Well, actually, I want to kind of challenge a premise in the question.
Okay.
Thinking in terms of the footprint and reducing our footprint is not a bad thing. The handprint is not an opposite of the footprint. The handprint is being proactive, and the footprint is being reactive. That's the way I simply put it. And that means that, yes, we still should turn off the switches and the faucets and drive less, those kinds of things. But we need to do things that are proactive that actually sort of create change. So where am I going with this? Well, maybe an example or two would be useful. So my favorite thing is planting a tree. So you put a tree in the ground, you actually choose the location, you water it, and you dig a hole and that sort of thing. There may be a bit of effort involved, but at a certain point you walk away and that tree keeps on growing and taking care of the environment. There's something that's self-sustaining about that initial effort that keeps on keeping on, and eventually the tree will replant new trees if given a chance. So what are some of the other things that are, shall we say, interesting? Bicycling. we all know bicycling is good, but how can we think in terms of something that changes the system? Well, there's this group out of Eugene, Oregon, that formed a company called Beeline that does bicycle delivery services. And they designed their own bike with a big box in the back, and it delivers food to grocery stores. So there's a whole lot of like systematic benefits to doing that, as opposed to just, you know, doing it myself and riding a bicycle. Going to work for a company that's doing good is also a nice thing. So becoming a bus driver, working for a company that rents tools, working for a nonprofit that does great things. These are all ways of creating handprints.
Let me take a moment to reintroduce you, and then we'll talk mm-hmm. some more. So we are speaking with John Beamer. He is a Portland engineer and energy conservation expert. He's written a new book, Our Environmental Handprints, Recover the Land, Reverse Global Warming, and Reclaim the Future. It was just released. We'll let you know how you can get a copy toward the end of our conversation. So you share some statistics about biking and walking. We all know that both of these modes of transport do make a better impact on sustainability than getting in your car to go to the post office, which is a mile away. Mm-hmm. Has the pandemic changed these statistics? And do you predict that we'll see increases in the use of bicycles and more public transportation once it comes back online? Do you think people will stick with it, I guess, is what I'm saying?
Well, I have to say I want to reassure you, and I'm not sure the data actually is reassuring.
Okay.
Let me start with the good news. And you know it, and your listeners perhaps know it, but the bicycle is 5 times as efficient as walking. And it's 30 times as efficient as driving. You know, you get equivalent to 900 miles per gallon equivalent in terms of energy riding a bicycle. So there is no argument that bicycling is the most efficient way to get around. So what have we seen during the pandemic? I did a little research just in the last few days. And, you know, I found one study that was mildly reassuring. It was reported by CityLab, and it showed that Los Angeles and Houston both doubled the amount of bike commuting that was done during the pandemic. The problem is that study was done last August, so it's not current. It had been done after 5 months into the pandemic. And the reasoning that they gave there was people were staying at home more, so they had more time to ride the bikes, and there was less traffic. And I'm not sure that those two trends are going to continue. If people do stay at home more, like with telecommuting and that sort of thing, maybe the bicycle gets used more. But even if I talk in terms of doubling the use for commuting, we're talking moving from 0.5% to 1%. We're not talking 30%, 40% of the people using bicycles. We haven't had the breakthrough kind of thing within the COVID, or, you know, has the COVID fit into place that. So I'm thinking that the real big changes that could happen, have happened in certain places, are where the cities actually manage the traffic differently. That means things like no car zones and zones where they have congestion pricing, where they keep cars out of the city or charged to have them go in the city during certain hours, bike lanes. These are things that actually encourage bicycling. Like, I think Portland, where I live, is one of the best places for bicycling, and they're like 5 or 7% of people commute on the bicycle. So I wish I could give you more rosy news, but that's what my data shows me.
Yeah. Too bad. It'd be nice to know that we were more like the Netherlands and other parts of Europe, Germany, but we're not.
Well, I will even give you a little background on that. So somebody pointed out that the U.S. was sort of formed on this principle of liberty and independence. And that translates into a lot of people feeling like they have a right to have their car if they can afford it. So in my mind, one of the best ways to encourage using a bicycle is not having a car.
Yeah, try to get people to give them up is the real issue. Although I see a sort of trend in younger people, either not wanting to drive at all or moving to areas where they don't need a car or just delaying getting a car or getting into a lifestyle where they would need a car. So maybe we'll see a generation that doesn't look at the car the way we did. Plus this whole idea of a carbon tax might, you know, fossil fuel tax might actually come to be. I wanted to talk about Oh, good. I'm glad to hear that. That makes me so happy. I wanted to talk about one thing that my husband and I talk about a lot, and that is about giving. And you talk about giving. How does giving impact sustainability, and what kinds of giving are you thinking about?
Yes. Well, there's a lot of examples of it. Generosity, I guess, in one sense, is a frame of mind. So there are a lot of examples of how people do it and use it in a good way. FreeCycle, I don't know whether your listeners have heard of that. It's a little like Craigslist in that people put out things that they have to give away, and they also put out that they want certain things. And we've gotten a whole water heater out of FreeCycle that somebody else would have sent to the trash, the landfill. And I gave away a Coke bottle that was a collector's item that would have ordinarily gone to the trash fill, you know, that kind of thing. So that keeps things going instead of going to the landfill. So you can also donate to resale outlets, you know, Goodwill and Value Village. And one of the things that I like to do is at my birthday parties, at least not all the time, but on occasion, is do a giveaway, which is instead of asking for or expecting gifts, invite people and say, there's going to be a giveaway. And this is a time when I get rid of a lot of things that I don't need that are good things, you know, that people might want. And I actually maybe get a few things that I share that maybe even reflect my values and give them to the people that come. So this is generosity. And, you know, how better to feel good about your friends than when they give you things? So I get something back from it.
Of course. I think that that's probably true about giving more than receiving. Most people will say that giving makes you feel as good as whoever you are giving something to, which was bad grammar, and I'm sorry for the grammar police who are going to come and probably shoot me. But anyway.
I would also point out that there's the whole donation thing.
Right.
So if you want me to talk a little bit about that, I can, but there's all sorts of kinds of giving.
Well, I just wanted to bring up the fact that one of the chapters was about giving, and that when you try to sort of juxtapose that with sustainability, you wonder what it means. But the first thing you said was generosity as a frame of mind, and that sort of, you know, encompassed that whole idea. So at the end of each of your chapters, you offer handprint opportunities. Explain what those are. It's a very interesting way of wrapping each chapter.
Thank you. That came about the third draft of my book. I just realized that I needed to make this much more down-to-earth and accessible to the ordinary person that's reading the book. So what are the handprint opportunities that regular people that, you know, aren't in specific government positions can do? And in each area, I'm discovering that there are things you can do. Let's start with the donating thing to start with. There are hundreds, thousands of nonprofits doing worthwhile things out there. So donating to those organizations is a good thing. Pick your favorite one. I like Nature Conservancy. You know, they buy land and put it into parks and protect species. That's a really big one. Johnson Creek Watershed Council is a local group that takes care of our stream that goes near our house. There are organizations such as Move to Amend that are trying to get the personhood out of corporations, you know, because that's kind of skewing their power. So there's a lot of organizations we can give to. So that donation is the starting point on a handprint opportunity all through the book. So now, if in your house you have various things you can do, first thing that came to my mind as I was thinking here is I can ask for my power to come from renewable resources for my utility. Not everybody has that choice, but renewable resources, when the money goes to renewable resources, they make money and they build more renewable resources. It's a way of moving away from coal and nuclear power by personal choice. And yes, it takes a lot of people to do that, but you know, Portland General Electric has more than 50,000 people here that actually do that. Oh, how you eat. So avoiding beef avoids all the environmental impact of beef. Eating perennial vegetables, perennial like nuts, berries, and that sort of thing, you don't have to plow up the ground. And so that allows the earth to regenerate, pull the carbon down out of the atmosphere. So there's at least a couple of things.
So I'm just going over the a couple of the things in the chapter that includes mobility and the bicycle.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's walk or ride a bike whenever possible, which we all know. And you know, we've been trying to say, you know, if it's under 3 miles or 4 miles, get on your bike. Don't get your car. Carpool. Trade in your gas car for an electric car. Live without owning a car. Take children on the bus. Drive a bus or a train. Participate in public transportation planning. And so the book is just filled with these wonderful ideas about sustainability. So the last thing I want to ask you, John, is how do you currently make a living and live such a sustainably positive life? What is it that you're doing? Because you like plant your own food gardens and food for, it was a comment you made about food that I thought was really interesting.
Well, I think it's not all that easy for people to copy my lifestyle. I've retired, so I have a small income from my retirement. Other people don't have that.
Sure.
So what I like to say to questions like that is you have to look at your own circumstance and say, where are the opportunities within your circumstance? So let's say you're a single mother with little income and struggling day to day. You can still read an environmental book to your child. And Santa Monica Library gives awards to books that are written from the environmental point of view. Impacting the child's perspective on the environment is huge, potentially huge in impact. If you're busy with a professional job, then the donation angle is good. If you're somewhere in between, volunteer. Go out there and help do the cleanups of the rivers. We've done some amazing river cleanups in this world. You know, the Thames River in London, the Cuyahoga River in Cleveland. They're working on the Los Angeles River now.
Right. I was going to mention the Cuyahoga River because everybody remembers when it was on fire, and this is where we live, and it is clean today.
Yeah, and that with fish and swimming and that sort of thing.
Right. I want to give my listeners the opportunity to get a copy of the book. We've been speaking with John Beamer. The book is Our Environmental Handprints, Recover the Land, Reverse Global Warming, Reclaim the Future. It is out now. Tell my listeners how they can find a copy, John.
Sure. It's basically available online at your online bookseller. The ones that I know about right now are Books A Million, IndieBound, BarnesandNoble.com or BN.com, Amazon.com, and Powell's.com. You can put my name or the book title in and do a search, and you'll come up with any or all of those. Also, one more thing. You could also Google my website, www.johnbeamer.com. That's JONB as in boy, IEMER.com.
It's a nice website. It's a cute picture of you too, right there. I saw it. Well, I really appreciate you talking with me. I know that, you know, Johanna's got you booked up to talk to people, and I'm glad she does, because I think the book is well worth having on your shelf, and actually put it on your coffee table and read it every day. So thank you for writing it. Thank you for talking with me, and I hope you have a great success in selling the book.
Oh, thank you for your blessing. Take care.
You too. Take care. John Beamer joined me from his home in Oregon. His new book, Our Environmental Handprints, is available at most of the usual places, and you can learn more about him and his work at johnbeamer.com. Let's take a short break, and when we return, we'll speak with Javier Sanchez from the Miami Dolphins Foundation about the Dolphins Challenge Cancer Rides. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist.
You're listening to the station that is your home for college radio in Cleveland, 88.7 FM, WJCU, University Heights.
The Outspoken Cyclist is proud to have Bike Law as a trusted partner. If you find yourself in need of legal advice or assistance as it pertains to any cycling issue, log on to bikelaw.com. We are back on The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm Diane Jenks. If you're ready to get back out to some larger events, especially events where you come together with friends and colleagues for a philanthropic fundraiser, or maybe you'd like to ride with some of your favorite Miami Dolphins players, perhaps you'll head down to Florida next winter for the 12th annual Dolphins Challenge Cancer Ride. You could even be knighted by the team's coach Flores as you come across the finish line when he presents you with your medal and announces your name. To whet your appetite for a century ride, or maybe 50 or 25 miles, Javier Sanchez, the Miami Dolphins Director of Development and Partnerships, is here to lure you to Florida next winter. Hello, Javier. Welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks for being my guest this week. How is Florida?
Thank you so much for having me. It's absolutely beautiful. I'm staring outside here at Hard Rock Stadium. Partly blue skies, nice and warm. Sun's coming out, so it's a beautiful day.
Well, here up in Cleveland, we're about ready to do the NFL draft.
That's right. We got something in common. This Thursday is a big night for us as that kicks off. Obviously, being part of the Miami Dolphins organization, it's a big one for us. Lots of excitement around this day.
Well, I got bad news for you. I think it's going to rain like hell here. And a lot of it's outdoors. I mean, I was watching some of the setup on the news yesterday, and yeah, I'm not sure it's going to be as exciting as if it were in Florida, but we'll see. Maybe it'll be more exciting in some ways.
Well, maybe we can have you come down here and you could watch it virtually.
Oh, there you go. There you go. So
the magic word from this year, virtual, right?
It is. I know. It's like I just sent a survey to all my yoga students, and one of the questions was, you know, are you burned out with Zoom? And, you know, I'm getting yeses. So,
Yeah, I have to imagine.
Yeah. Anyway, it's really good to be able to talk about events again, like the NFL draft, but like people getting outside and doing things. April 10th, you guys, Miami Dolphins, hosted your 11th Dolphins Challenge Cancer Ride. And I guess it's also a run and a walk. But tell us a bit about the background of the event, because it raises so much money.
Yes, thank you for this opportunity, first and foremost. You know, I work on the foundation side of the organization, so the Miami Dolphins Foundation. And we started this initiative back in 2010 to help raise funds for cancer research. The great Miami Dolphins football player and also radio voice in South Florida, Jim Mad Dog Mandich, was diagnosed with bile duct cancer. And he helped kick off the first one, the first DCC, as we call it down here, a cycling event. It used to be a two-day journey. 100 miles one day, 70 the next, starting and ending here at the stadium. And then now, and it's, we just finished it the 11th year. We've raised over $39 million for Sylvester. This was a very impactful year for us, over $6 million raised this year alone. And to say that happened during the pandemic, I should say coming out of the pandemic as well, that was just a huge feat for us. It all goes to cancer research. And when we say it all, It's not just proceeds. It's the word that we don't use when we talk about where the money goes. Every single dollar raised goes directly to cancer research, thanks to both the Dolphins organization, the ownership, leadership style, but also the supporting partners that help make this event possible.
That's a lot of money, and it's a commitment that is very commendable. We have a write-up here for the Cleveland Clinic Foundation called VeloSano, and I know all their money tends to do the same thing. But from what I understand, this is the largest fundraising event by any sports franchise.
That's the case.
Yep. Yeah. What about the $75 million gift pledge to the Cancer Center in November? That's a big number.
This was huge, very impactful for us. You know, when things started to shift this past year, lots going on in the nation and all throughout the world, our leadership, our CEO, Tom Garfinkel, just turned around and said, you know, our relationship with Sylvester Comprehensive Cancer Center and the cancer community, we have your back. We're doubling down with this, and we're making a $75 million commitment. This goes back to day one, but also just demonstrates our future, that we are committed to this cause. And we've restructured the event. The event used to be called Dolphins Cancer Challenge. Now we've changed that around. We flipped it around to Dolphins Challenge Cancer, demonstrating that we're challenging cancer year round. And then this cycling event is the pinnacle. It's the day that we all come together to really finalize what our gift is for the year. And it has grown to be the largest in the NFL. That's something we take great pride in, but also we realize that that's what the cancer community needs. They need better research. They need top researchers. Thanks to our partnership with Sylvester down here in South Florida, we've helped them become an NCI-designated cancer institute, which makes them only one of 71 throughout the nation, to help find better cures, more positive outcomes, and just treatments that are going to help the cancer community when they're faced with that threat.
Let me take a moment to reintroduce you, and then I want to ask some specifics about the event. We're speaking with Javier Sanchez. He is the Miami Dolphins Foundation Director of Development and Partnerships. So you were able to hold this event April 10th in person, right?
Yes, we 100% held it in person and virtually. So what we did was the Hard Rock Stadium had turned into one of the few organizations and venues that was able to host events all throughout the pandemic, everything from open air theaters, drive-ins. We had a meal distribution where we distributed about 1,000 meals a day to local community members, Miami Dolphins football games, University of Miami football games, boxing matches. So we did over 100 events throughout the pandemic. So we were fortunate that we were able to follow those guidelines and paths to ensure that we could host a safe event this year more than any other. As you can imagine, safety was our top priority. We did everything from follow the guidelines. We followed the guidelines of Hard Rock Stadium in partnership with the CDC as well. But also, we realized that we're hosting an outdoor event. We're hosting an event that's about health and wellness. And we reached out to our partners at Sylvester, and we committed to continuing to raise funds. So having an in-person event was very important for us. And we had a pretty strong crowd. I'm sure, as you all know, the cycling boom that took place throughout the pandemic, where shops were running out of bikes and everyone wanted to go outside and participate. Like, it showed at the event. We had a record crowd for the 100-mile ride. We made it up to 375 participants doing the 100. I was proud to say I was one of them this year.
Good for you.
Thank you. And it was a very beautiful day where I think the community just felt happy to be able to come back and participate.
So it's interesting that you say the bike shop problem. It is still happening. We are looking at 2024 before things get back to normal.
Wow.
So it's really a struggle business. So
what's your recommendation right now to people that want to get out there and ride?
Well, if they have a bike, the thing they can do is call their local bike shop and make sure that it's safe. Because a lot of people are pulling bikes out of basements and garages, mm-hmm. and even picking them up on tree lawns, and you just don't know what shape they're in. As far as getting parts, it's a crapshoot. You know, we have no idea.
It's funny. Normally we would facilitate rentals with our local bike shops. And this year, when the local bike shops pretty much didn't have any, everyone was scrambling, and it was a great, I don't want to say it was a great problem to have, but it was beautiful to see how impactful and how much this event meant to people, but also how much they wanted to participate, that they were doing whatever they could to purchase bikes, to rent bikes, to borrow bikes. And you're absolutely right. Getting fitted, doing it right. We know that's a success to having a successful ride. But I will say so many first timers came out this year with two huge groups that participated in 100. One had about 25 people. Another one had about 45 people, all doing the first 100-mile ride. This was their first century. And they had started, they had formed just a few months ago during the pandemic. So we were happy about how the community came together specifically to ride bikes this past year.
It's really interesting. People are so hungry for events, and ones that do the kinds of things you're doing, you know, they're the premier events. So are you raising funds throughout the year? Are there other things that the Dolphins Development Center does?
Yep, 100%. One of our changes in the change of name was also just challenging cancer year round. So we've partnered with Sylvester to come up with a few different programs that allow us to continue to use our platform. So you'll see everything from 50-50 raffles during Dolphins games during the month of October, the NFL's Intercept Cancer and Crucial Catch game takes place, where we'll host different, whether fundraisers or unique events for it. One that's very meaningful and I'm very excited about is we now offer the opportunity to fund the cancer study via partnership. So an organization can actually get to know the researchers, help decide which study is going to be completed. So in other words, if you want to focus on something that's pediatric or women's cancers or adult or survivorship, there's a specific cancer type that means something to you, you can then speak with us and we will help brand that partnership. And then once it's completed, the most meaningful part is we'll turn around and match it. So the study that's funded will actually receive double the funding from what you contribute.
That's really awesome. So there's a question I wanted to ask about the ride. Does some of the football players join the ride? Do some of your players ride too and their families?
Players, coach was there knighting finishers this year. I don't know if you saw that, but Coach Flores, He has taken over the town. As far as, I'm a born and raised local, so I can say this, you know, taking off my hat. He's won our hearts from you know, showing us his heart both on the field and off. And as finishers were coming through this year, he was knighting them with their medals,
asking them
what their name was. And this went viral on social. We're real proud of him. Players came out as they do every single year. They rode, they fundraised. Our alumni base showed up so incredibly strong. You know, the greats, the Miami Dolphins greats that we've all known and grown to love, Nat Moore, John Offerdahl, Joe Rose, Kim Bokamper, Mark Duper, Mark Clayton. They're always longtime supporters, and so many others. I hate to not mention all of them, but there was about 50 altogether.
Wow.
And of course, the Miami Dolphins cheerleaders, they like to rival the alumni team to see who can raise more funds. Some people make this event about, you know, riding a bike. Some people make this event about, you know, the competitive, I guess, playfulness that they can have. But the good thing is they all turn around and support because they realize, like, this is what the Dolphins organization, this is what the Dolphin, being a Dolphin, Miami Dolphins fan is down here.
That's just awesome. So the last thing I want to know, and so my listeners, especially in the Florida area or even further away, when will the next DCC be, and how can my listeners find out more about it?
Absolutely. Well, we're looking at early 2022. We have not yet finalized the date. However, typically the event tends to happen in February or April of each year. So stay tuned for the date. We should have that by mid to late summer.
Okay.
We are at dolphinschallengecancer.com. That's our website. And I got to tell you, you know, for those of you that are looking to get out of the weather that you're in, just come to a beautiful area, affordable hotels, have the opportunity to ride a very beautiful experience. Velozano is a great, great ride. We welcome you to come down and participate. I participated in Pelotonia a couple of years ago just to check it out and experience it. And we all believe in supporting this, each other, you know, all throughout the nation. This is very important. And I appreciate all that you do by hosting this podcast and by having us, because, you know, there's a lot for us to do together here. So if anybody would like to come down, we invite you, we welcome you. Registration for 2022 will open mid to late summer, and we will have it all available at dolphinschallengecancer.com.
Such a great conversation. Javier Sanchez, he's the Miami Dolphins Foundation Director of Development and Partnerships. We've been talking about the Dolphins Challenge Cancer, which they certainly do. They raise tons of money with a wonderful event. Thank you so much for talking with me. Good luck with 2022, and I hope you can get out and ride.
Thank you. We're looking forward to it. This is a great time of the year to get out and ride your bike.
Thanks, Javier. Have a great day.
You too.
Javier Sanchez is the Director of Development and Partnerships for the Miami Dolphins Foundation. For more information on the DCC 12 ride, you can log on to dolphinschallengecancer.com. We're going to take another short break, and when we return, we'll speak with the East Coast Greenway's Executive Director, Dennis Mercado Soriano. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist.
WJCU, University Heights, from the campus of John Carroll University.
Are back on The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm your host, Diane Jenks. There's been a lot of news these days about infrastructure and how biking and walking fit into a new plan that the Biden administration has laid out. Secretary Pete, as everyone calls our new transportation secretary, is seen riding a bike with his Secret Service crew in tow all over D.C. And so all that, along with the extraordinary efforts that the East Coast Greenway crew makes, is piecing together the 3,000-plus-mile route from Maine to Florida. And this year, for the first time, as the Greenway's staff is about to expand with a new position in the New York City, New Jersey area, you can ride from cheesecake to cheesesteak, as Executive Director Dennis Mercado Soriano tells us. Hi, Dennis. Welcome back to The Outspoken Cyclist. It's always good to catch up with you. How are you?
It's great to be back. Thank you. Doing great.
Yeah, things are going well for our Greenway.
Yes, indeed. It's a full Greenway, and we're building more and more all the time, and we're talking to federal leaders about why we need to invest much more through Greenway stimulus.
Well, and now we have a real transportation secretary who's actually interested.
I've been excited to see Secretary Pete biking around and talking about how multi-use paths are indeed infrastructure. And so now it's just a trick to make sure that that talk turns into action.
Right.
That's what we're working on.
I wanted to talk with you today specifically about an event, because now that things are starting to open up a little bit again, it looks like events are going to start happening. And this one's exciting. You know, I'm always interested in what the Greenway is doing. So I want to talk about the 2021 New York City to Philadelphia ride. It's coming up in August. So why don't you give us some details?
Yes, thank you. This is the first ever New York to Philadelphia Greenway ride. And so it's on the East Coast Greenway. It's going to feature a ton of beautiful spots, some that are brand new, like biking over the Gothels Bridge and the Bayonne Bridge. There's new bike ped facilities there, so come and check it out on our ride. You can also enjoy the DNR Canal towpath, which goes from New Brunswick, 35 miles through Princeton and down to Trenton, and then you get to the Delaware River, and we're going to finish there in Philadelphia.
So this is a two-day event. So
that's right.
The first day you go from New York City to Princeton. So where are you staying in Princeton?
We have 100 people camping out. So we've sold out our camping. And then we have a lot of hotels in Princeton that we're going to be helping to fill up.
How many people are you going to be able to accommodate on this ride?
500 is our max. And we're at around 325 or so at this point. So I encourage everyone, if you want to, you know, be a part of this brand new ride from these iconic cities, from cheesecake to cheesesteak, then
I love it.
I recommend you register really soon.
Yeah. What's the total mileage?
It's about 125 miles over 2 days, a little more mileage on the first day, and then a nice, easy ride on the second day with less mileage.
How are you feeding 500 people?
Yes, we're going to have a lot of food for everybody. You know, bananas, granola bars, the usual. We just heard from a beer vendor that wants to give us beer for everybody on Saturday night in Princeton, you know. So we're going to help people have whatever they need, and that's part of the registration.
All right, let me reintroduce you. We're speaking with Dennis Mercado Soriano. He is the head of the East Coast Greenway. We're talking about the New York City to Philadelphia ride. It's this coming August. We'll give you more details just before we sign off. I wanted to talk about the fundraising commitment
yes.
for the ride. So you have some tiers, some levels. And tell me about those and then where that money is going to be used.
Absolutely. So there's standard and there's premium. So the standard registration is $150. And then you have a $600 fundraising commitment. And that's checking in with friends and family, unless you want to just write the check yourself. And the great thing about that is then you're not just riding and having an awesome experience, but then you're investing in that route, getting better and better in the years ahead. Because this ride is funding a new position. We're hiring a New York and New Jersey Greenway coordinator, in part thanks to this ride. So when you're fundraising, you've signed up for the ride, you know that you're making a difference. You're making biking safer for people in the New York to Philadelphia region.
So that's tier one. What's the premium then?
And if you want to go premium, that's a $250 registration fee. And then we book the hotel for you. You don't have to worry about that at all.
Oh, I see.
And the fundraising commitment is higher. It's $1,200. And again, that's more impact that you're going to make.
Have you already chosen your coordinator?
No, we have not. We actually today just put out the position announcement. So this is brand new breaking stuff here. We're going to have a 7-person team now from Maine to Florida. And that's going to ease everybody's workload and really make us advance the Greenway much faster.
Where will that coordinator have to be? Does he or she have to be in New York or in Philadelphia or in New Jersey? You want him in that area, I take it.
Absolutely. We want someone great in New Jersey or New York, close to the East Coast Greenway.
So we can let people actually see that listing on the greenway.org site?
That's right. It is. You can just look for jobs on greenway.org, and that's exactly where you can find more details about the New York to Philadelphia bike ride.
One thing I want to ask about the ride is, how much of it is on paved greenway? Is there anything that's on unpaved areas?
Yes, great question. So the DNR Canal towpath is one of our stretches. It's 35 miles. It's beautiful, but it's unpaved. And so if there's been a lot of rain before August 28th and 29th, before that weekend, then you're going to want to go there with a little bit wider tires, not mountain bike tires, but also not those road bike tires that are super thin.
Well, this is awesome. I'm really excited to be able to talk about it. So it's New York to Philadelphia, August 28th, 29th. Only 125 miles, which by that time, everybody should be able to do that over 2 days. And there are only 175 spaces left. So if you're interested, go to eastcoastgreenway.org. And if you're interested in the position, one more thing. What are the qualifications for somebody who might be applying for this position of a coordinator on the East Coast?
That's a great question. So we're looking for someone is starting out. You've got to have the passion to get the Greenway done. You want to be out there. You want to make biking and walking and running safer for people around you and in your community and to build community. The other thing we're looking for is some depth into the process. So maybe there's a degree around public policy, or maybe it's a planning degree even, where it's really focused and they're understanding. You've got to talk to the mayor. You've got to talk to the Metropolitan Planning Organization, that kind of thing. We're looking for some great experience. So passion, experience, and a great attitude, because this is an awesome team here at the East Coast Greenway Alliance, and we want to bring in another star.
Perfect. Well, Dennis, it's always great to catch up with you, and it's always great to hear new and exciting things happening with the Greenway. You know, I'm very proud to be part of it. So once again, we've been speaking with Dennis Marcato Soriano. He is the head grand poobah of the East Coast Greenway. Remember, there's a ride from New York City to Philadelphia August 28th and 29th. If you haven't signed up for anything yet this season, maybe this is the ride because it helps support the Greenway, which I love. So I'm really excited. We're hoping to do a little bit of the Greenway ourselves when we come to the East Coast this year, but I don't know if it'll be that weekend.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Diane. I appreciate it.
Always great to talk with you. Have a great day.
You too.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Dennis Marcato Soriano is the executive director of the East Coast Greenway. If you're interested in the New York to Philly ride or want to apply for the position of coordinator in that area, you can go to greenway.org. My thanks to Dennis, Javier, and John for joining me on the show this week. And of course, my thanks to you for listening. Please remember to visit our Facebook page and join the conversation or leave a comment on our blog, outspokencyclist.com. If you do not currently subscribe to the podcast, you can do so through your favorite podcast app. Next week, we'll be speaking with Michelin star chef Alan Murchison about his new book, The Cycling Chef, Recipes for Getting Lean and Fueling the Machine, and with attorney Bruce Hagen from the Bike Law Network in Atlanta. I hope you have a great week. Stay safe, stay well, and remember, if you have a chance, go for a ride. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today on The Outspoken Cyclist with Diane Jenks. We hope you enjoyed this week's show and we welcome your thoughts and comments. We'll be back next week with new guests, topics, conversations, and news from the world of cycling. Remember, you can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and most other podcast apps and never miss an episode. The Outspoken Cyclist is a copyrighted production of DBL Promotions with the assistance of WJCU-FM Cleveland, a service of John Carroll University. Thanks again for listening, ride safely, and we'll see you next week.